We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Solid Verbal. My name is Dan. Ty couldn't join today. He will be back soon, I promise. But sometimes there are episodes where I elbow Ty out of the way, like Anthony Mason, or, look, this is an LA guest, so I'll, like, Eldon Campbell, right? I don't know how far back I need to go to really hit the sweet spot of Ryan Abraham, USCFootball.com. Like, who is the Laker that you have a soft spot for on the low block?
On the low, that's a good question. I mean, I don't like
a Rambis.
Rambis was the energy that was there. He was always great.
Michael Cooper.
I wasn't as big of a Cooper guy. Sure. Like Rambis. But I mean, when you go like to the Shaq kind of people, like that's like, you know, as far as bullying people around, bringing down the backboards and stuff, like he was always fun to watch. Try to go to Laker games whenever you can.
I'll transition and I'll segue this really easily because USC football at times was a situation that everybody hated and must have been the biggest absolute joy to watch at the absolute heyday. And I felt that way about Shaq and being a Laker fan, like the late 90s, early 2000s. You're just like, I get why you hate this. But as somebody invested in the success of it, it rules. It is a complete joy every night that he could destroy equipment. He's so dominant. And I loved it. So
it was good. He's great on TNT now, too. So
he's wonderful.
Him and Barkley are awesome. Yeah,
absolutely is. All right. I'm bearing the lead here because Ryan Abraham is the publisher, longtime publisher and face of USCFootball.com, which sounds like an official site because it is, just not for the team. But for now, the 24/7 sports affiliate, the headquarters of all things, the host, co-host of the Peristyle podcast, a true pioneer in the college football podcasting landscape. You've been doing this for how long now?
Yeah, I think the same year you guys started.
It was
2008.
Right around then, yeah.
Because we were back. Remember back in the day, I forget where you were working, but you were maybe the SI stuff.
Yeah.
And we were like comparing our Twitter followers. We probably had a couple thousand at the time or something. I think you've kind of beat me by then. But like,
whatever.
Yeah, that was early on, like 2008. Like it was mostly because if you're an LA person, this is a pro sports town. And I would do radio across the country, like the station from Omaha or Tallahassee would call you because USC was good and they would want to talk. And it was hard to get on the local sports radio. So I was like, oh, I don't know what podcasting is. Maybe try that. So that's basically why I started.
I love it. Yeah, it was basically, I didn't know that college football podcasting existed when Ty and I started. And we're like, well, we might as well do it. And Ty had a background a little bit in audio production. So that's why we did it. And so we came across each other very early on. But We're having you on. I'm having you on today because USC, after a little bit of time, and these are your words, in the Bane dungeon in terms of college football success and relevance and excitement, has crawled out and has seen the light of day because they've hired a new coach. And I turn to you because I have all sorts of questions about the process and the outlook and the feeling and where this is all going. But, and I jotted down a number of things, the most important thing that I want to know, because I'm from the area and you have been in the area for quite some time, we saw Brian Kelly put on a voice at a basketball game in Baton Rouge. We're like, you're not from the South, but you just said family.
That was so
has
good.
It come to pass that Lincoln Riley has now accidentally taken on like a South Bay, Southern Cal, like, has he pulled you aside and said, bro, should we get burritos at LBJ and go to Temescal or what? Like, has that happened?
That would be awesome. If once we start talking to him about which freeways he needs to take to get to wherever he's going, yep. Like, yeah, you take the 405 to the, like, if he starts talking that way, for sure. He did. He was on, I think it was on the Pac-12 network. He was on with Yogi Roth on signing day, and he did reveal that he surfs. So
whoa,
I don't know where that came from. From Texas, coaching in Oklahoma. I mean, maybe with his stint on the East Coast or something, but he said he does surf.
Wow.
We're going to get to talk to him. It'll be our first, a little bit later today when we're recording this, the first press conference with him outside of like the pomp and circumstance one that he did at the top of the Coliseum. This will just be sort of a regular one with the local beat about the early signing period and
sure.
stuff. But it seems to be fitting in so far, but I don't know if he's stopped. You know, when the early signing period makes things, everything's crazy. You know, they had to host official visitors and hire a staff and all those things. While he's watching practice, like he watched USC practice for the Cal game, the last game of the season that was postponed, the championship weekend, two teams that weren't going to make a bowl. So it was a really weird couple of weeks with him. But I don't think he's done anything like what Brian Kelly did down at LSU yet.
Oh, that's disappointing.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Unfortunately. When he comes up with thoughts about the 110, he's like, actually, got to get off at this exit, dude. That's the move. That's the pro move. Get off at 6th. That's where you're like, oh, man, you are one of us. You are one of us when you start having those opinions. All right. When did this all start? Because Clay Helton has been sort of a, you know, dead man walking is probably a cruel term, but the idea of Clay Helton as the long-term USC football coach was not an especially realistic one for quite some time. And the Bedlam game happened, Oklahoma loses, and in a matter of hours, the story of Lincoln Riley coming to LA breaks. And he's talked about it, that it came together quite quickly, but it is my belief that contracts in the dozens and dozens of million dollars with very specific perks and bonuses are not, you know, negotiated in a number of hours. So obviously USC was looking for quite some time because they fired Clay Helton early on in the season. Just if it's a guess, if it's an educated guess, how long was the flirtation between Lincoln Riley's people and USC going back and forth?
Yeah, so I think you could look at a number of different ways. One, I mean, it starts with the leadership. And they had Mike Bone come over from Cincinnati. His chief of staff is a younger guy, Brandon Sosna, who's an up-and-coming star in the league. And we talked to him. He'd looked at Lincoln Riley back in 2014, you know, and when they were at there. So he's someone that they've had their eye on for a while. Now, he told us that Lincoln Riley didn't return their call at the time. No one realized that Bob Stoops was going to retire and then Lincoln Riley was going to take over the Oklahoma program. But that's someone that's kind of been on their radar for a while. As far as like when they came down with this, I feel like this was kind of like a Hail Mary last minute thing that there was probably feelers put out there, probably agents being contacted. But were they really going to like pull the trigger on Lincoln Riley? We asked Brandon about the Bedlam game. If it goes the other way, if they don't get that PI call or whatever, and Oklahoma wins, he's probably not going to be the head coach at USC.
Wow.
And I think you know Tim Tesalone, the USC Sports Information Director. I was talking to him. He's actually retiring after 43 years. He's like the Hall of Fame and all this stuff. But he was out to breakfast. I think it was at Bill's Pancake House, Manhattan Beach, you're familiar
of
with.
Of course.
They flew his family in, like his daughter from New York, because he was retiring. So they were at the Cal game. And they brought his son actually lives like a few houses away from me in Hermosa Beach. Brought his family out. His wife was there and they were going to breakfast Sunday morning. So this is when things were starting to break. And you know, Brandon gives Tim a call, like, we need another bio written for Lincoln Riley. So he had a lot of bios written for potential head coaches. And we know, you know, Tim told us just, you know, that Lincoln Riley wasn't one of them. So there could have been probably like some sort of talks, but I don't think they really realized this could happen until things started to fall into place that Saturday night and then in Sunday morning. And even, you know, Alex Grinch comes out on the, and Dennis Simmons come out on the plane with him from Oklahoma. Neither of them even had contracts at the time. So it was, I think it did come together quickly, but I know some people get, you know, tied up in the semantics, but at least the sports information person didn't realize that he was a candidate because he didn't have a bio written at that morning.
What other bios were written?
They don't. Yeah, they don't really tell us that kind of stuff.
If you had to guess, if you had to put a few Abraham shekels down, which bios may or may not have been written, just as possibilities.
Yeah, it's like coming from the Luke Fickell, you know, everyone think, you know, I think you have to have that one. But I think they realize, too, that he just seems to be like an Ohio guy and it wasn't going to go there. We heard some real rumblings with the Dave Aranda stuff that came on later. But I feel like, when you talk to Brandon, you talk to Mike, they, I mean, this wasn't going to be about a flash in the pan sort of thing. If you look at like USC's basketball coach, who's doing really well, they're like in the top 10 right now, Andy Enfield.
Yeah.
But when they hired him and Pat Hayden hired him, it was because they made a Sweet 16 run with Florida Gulf Coast. Like that didn't seem to be their MO. That was more about like, if you look at like a James Franklin, who I think they were looking at for sure. What did he do at a place like Vanderbilt? And what did, were they like before? What were they like afterwards? Vanderbilt was terrible for many, 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 many years. Then they were good for 3 years when he was there, and they've been terrible since. Like, they haven't won as many SEC games since, you know, Franklin left than they did in the 3 years when he was there. So that's more about sustained success. So that's why the Dave Aranda thing might have been a little, because he didn't, you know, had an okay first year, not that good first year, and then a really good second year. But we did hear there was some momentum with him and like a Matt Campbell for sure. They kept, to be, to give those guys credit, they kept this way closer to the vest than really any other administration before. Like, we could talk to a lot of people that work in the athletic department, and they were, everyone would tell you what they were hearing. It was pretty much, you know, unless you were Mike Bone or Brandon Sosna, like, they weren't really talking to people. So even the people that work in the department, so much more professionally done. But I think those are the, probably three of the bigger names that would have been on that list.
Gotcha. No, I wanted to ask about the Mike Bone difference. Obviously, kept things close to the vest because it, you know, the Lincoln Riley name popped and nobody had really considered it or thought about it and looked at it as a possibility. So during this search, what has been the difference? I think obviously the quiet nature of it, but what makes Mike Bone more of a professional than Pat Hayden, Lynn Swann, you know, sort of the back end of the Mike Garrett era? What has been the difference in your eyes?
So, I mean, just hiring somebody that's good at their job is something that USC avoided at all costs for whatever reasons.
It could have,
I mean, it's so bizarre. Like, let's get a former football player to be the athletic director. Literally for like 30 years, they had former football players as the athletic director. And Mike, you know, Mike Garrett made the Pete Carroll hire. He was, you know, working in the athletic department when they promoted him. But Pat Hayden and Lynn Swann had no college administrative experience whatsoever. And really just the only reason they were hired was because they were former football players. And I feel like, Dan, there was just this terrible kind of environment in the athletic department. They were successful, but they sort of just did everything their own way. It was very insular. And when you bring in someone from the outside that doesn't know anything about what's going on, they don't come in and say, here's how we're going to do things. They say, hey, how do you guys do things? And I think that's what they wanted to just continue on.
Right.
But that's just going to deteriorate. It's like, you know, termites eating at the building. And so then you just go out. And I don't know if Mike Bone's going to be a great athletic director. I mean, this is a great hire for sure. That's the most important job you can do. But he was at least someone that's been there before. He's worked in the Pac-12, had, you know, great success at Cincinnati, at least hiring Luke Fickell. And you bring someone in that's going to have their own, like, they've seen things before. They've like, oh, I've made that mistake before. Here's, we're going to do this differently. And I always felt like you get a real athletic director that comes in, he would look around and go, okay, why are you doing that? That's horrible idea. I'd never do that again. Like, there's a lot of that stuff, I think, that was going on in the athletic department they had to fix. So they fixed it up. I know that the fans really wanted them to fire Clay Helton a couple years ago. Their MO was, we need to, like, get our, you know, get everything in order in our house so we can attract a great coach. If they fired Clay Helton 2 years ago, I don't think they're getting the caliber of a guy like Lincoln Riley. So yes, things have, you know, gone downhill for the last couple of years, but they, I think it was a bet on themselves, and I think it paid off because it took a while. They fixed everything, yep. And then you allow a guy like Lincoln Riley to come to USC.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine you were one of those people critical of retaining Clay Helton without fully knowing the vision, which is fair, right? You, if you don't know the vision of Mike Bone and you're being critical, it's totally fair that you don't, you know, see the big picture until it all becomes a little bit more clear. And I think to your point that it's Mike Bone not just having the experience, but it's like, this is what you look for in a deputy this. This is what you look for in a deputy that. This is what you look for in somebody overseeing basketball. This, you know, and it's one of those things where if you're attracting, if you're looking to attract a coach, and there were stories about Urban Meyer being interested, but not really seeing the resource allocation and not really seeing that this is a serious program from the top down, that you do have to get things in order, because it doesn't matter if you bring in Lincoln Riley, because if the foundation is cracked and not ready to compete for Pac-12 and beyond championships, he's not going to do it. And I think that's what became the most obvious these past couple of years. Yes.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you find, like, when they came in and you start to talk to these guys, and they were very accessible, like, Lynn Swann wouldn't, I mean, he didn't talk to people that worked for him. It was very strange. Like, you would talk to people like, yeah, Lynn Swann doesn't even return my calls. And they're like, oh, you work in the department. Mm-hmm. There was just a bizarre hire altogether. But these guys, I think they were very upfront about things, and they would talk about, you know, some of the problems, and, you know, there was some low hanging fruit there that they could fix. They would talk about hitting singles. They would come in and fix some things. Like, USC is one of three schools that had never played an FCS program, and they decided to schedule for this season UC Davis. They didn't really need to, but they wanted to get more home games.
Yeah.
And the fans didn't like it. And so the athletic department comes in, they pay a bunch of extra money, and they schedule San Jose State instead.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, that's like hitting a single. You know, they didn't get rid of Clay Helton. Lynn Swann had banned the song girls from basketball games for some reason, the USC cheerleaders, and just stupid stuff like that that you can go in. And there was a lot of things that you could fix. If you come into a program that's sort of a dumpster fire, if you're, you know, there's a lot of upside there, right? Mm-hmm. So I think the athletic department could do that. The problem is they had that white whale. They had the one thing that they needed to do, which was get rid of Clay Helton, and not realizing that Lynn Swann had given him this like fully guaranteed extension and all this stuff.
Right.
But I think they were very patient about it and being able to go through and, like you said, sort of build that infrastructure that was needed. A lot of things needed to happen. And I do think that they were betting on themselves, where it would be, they lost a lot of money, I think. There was a lot of fan apathy. We were talking about offset, you know, people that were canceling season tickets, and they just renovated the Coliseum. And people were just out of it. We saw it on, you know, on our website. There's just less people listening to our shows or reading our articles. Mm-hmm. And that's changed completely. So I feel like this was like, they felt there was a lot of criticism coming their way from people like us, from the fans. And they sort of like, but, you know, were biding their time. Mm-hmm. They did the right things. They did the right way. Now, if they would have got like Luke Fickell or Matt Campbell or something, it'd still be great. Like, this is the, you know, professional hire. You actually hired an experienced head coach. And then they went above and beyond and ended up getting like a Lincoln Riley, which no one even expected was possible. So it was, you know, they bet on themselves, and I think it paid off.
You mentioned the remodeling and renovation of the Coliseum. What other resources have been poured into the program in terms of facilities, in terms of, you know, a recruiting department? A lot has been written about how, I think it was Antonio Morales for The Athletic, talking about what USC actually looks like inside the program compared to some other programs, according to, you know, the parents of recruits and people who have been around a number of programs. How is USC upped that or planning on upping that to sort of meet where, I mean, Ohio State, Alabama, even on the West Coast, Oregon, like what is USC, what wheels are in motion or have already been put in place to more, I guess, professionalize the USC operation?
Yeah, so they upgraded probably almost 10 years ago now, which is like an eternity. They built the John McKay Center, which is an athletic center, which closed off to everyone but the athletes. So they have like little thumbprints and stuff to get in, which is really nice. They had an indoor practice facility like for the first time, improved weight room and all that kind of stuff. But it's not, you know, right now you need a football only facility. And so one of the promises that was made to Lincoln Riley was that there was going to be facility upgrades. We don't have any specifics on what that's going to be. And it's an urban campus. You know, there's just very limited real estate of what you're doing when you're working at USC. And so I'm not sure what those plans are going to be, but I feel like the next step is going to be something like, as far as physical, you know, buildings and stuff goes, a football only facility to try to keep up with some of the other programs that are out there. But they did invest a lot into the support staff and the infrastructure, you know, the video teams and all that stuff, you know, social media. They were really doing it, you know, just kind of like half-heartedly for a lot of this stuff. We're like, oh, you can do this job and you can make the Instagram posts and stuff too. A lot, you know, Clemson or whatever, you have like teams of 20, 30 people doing all these things. So they've upped their game, I think, of all that stuff as far as outward presence on social media with a lot of the, you know, the prospects seem to like producing videos and things like that. And then just really hiring more support staff people. I think when Clay Helton was first around, they had a couple of like recruiting assistants, and now they've upped that up. They've gone out like to different programs and hired, you know, bigger name, support staff people. So I think they've done a pretty good job of all that. But there's going to be some limitations as far as like what you have on campus. I remember back in the day, you know, Pete Carroll, when they first took over, his strength coach was Chris Carlisle, and they had their weight room was, it was probably the worst in, you know, like the Power Five. And I remember sitting in his, like, little, you know, the strength coach of USC, they're like winning national championships in this really small little like closet, like, and Reggie Bush is like doing bench presses right outside of his room. And he's telling me like, yeah, we came in and like, hey, we need better facilities. And they're like, well, go win a Pac-12 championship. So they did. And they're like, well, go win a national championship. So they did. And they're like, well, you already won one. You don't really need to upgrade facilities. But they eventually did. But it was just sort of like that battle that was going on. It's like USC sort of like isolated in Los Angeles. Like you're on the West Coast. There's no Georgia or Florida or anyone down the street. And they were really good, but they could kind of do it their own way. College football, it's just so much bigger now. Like you can't just, oh, we're going to keep doing it our way. So we'll see what they do facility-wise. But sorry, long answer there, Dan.
And something I thought about, by the way, as you mentioned, USC being squarely in the middle of downtown LA, it's a lot more expensive to pay support staffers in LA than it is in Eugene, Columbus, Norman, basically anywhere. Maybe Boston College might be expensive, but even that's outside of Boston. Like the $60K, the $70K, the $52K that you can pay a video guy or whatever, it does not go particularly far in LA, and you're not living anywhere near the USC campus really for that type of money. And it's something that, right, it's the resource allocation that like, oh, we need to put in this much more for the same number of heads that other places have.
It's true. And even with assistant coaches. So
yeah,
like maybe you're a DB coach making like 200 grand a year or something. Like if you're living in Ames, Iowa, like you probably have a mansion, you know,
yeah.
And in LA, you got a 2-bedroom apartment. And
yeah.
So it's just, and depends where you're living. So it's definitely different. And it's a different feel, but you're selling, I think they're doing a pretty good job of selling that experience, like the Hollywood thing and all that. And, you know, they're now bringing recruits over to SoFi Stadium, which is, you know, this cool thing where they put the video boards and all that stuff up there. So I think there's positives and negatives, obviously, but it's the resources you have to, you're going to be spending more money. Because it's not, if you're bringing a video guy in or even, you know, grad assistants that are trying to, you know, get by just basically going to college, it's not inexpensive to live there. So there's not a lot of big city college campuses like that, you know, Miami, USC, you know, UCLA, another one. But
yeah,
it's, you do have to put more resources into it to get those guys in.
I want to talk human resources. What's on USC's roster right now? I mean, this is a team that lost, what, 6 of 7, 7 of 8 to finish out the year. And obviously, there has been a mix of kind of great on paper recruiting classes and super disappointing recruiting classes. What is the state of the roster? Where is it interesting? Where is it thin? What is Lincoln Riley ahead of, you know, whoever he might bring in the rest of the recruiting class and through the portal? What is he dealing with right now?
Yeah, it's very in flux. And I think you're seeing that, I mean, across college football, but whenever you have a coaching change, it's going to happen. And it's, you know, I think Lincoln Riley said it's like signing day every day when you're talking about the transfer portal, because guys can come in.
Yeah.
Guys can go out. I think they're going to hit it pretty hard, Dan. There's, you know, they got, you know, a handful of commitments, and they were able to, like, get a Raelique Brown, the five-star running back, to switch to USC. They got a couple other guys that are on the hook for it, but it just wasn't going to be a big high school class. So there was going to be more guys going into the transfer portal. Now, we've seen some bigger name USC players go in the transfer portal, like starting with Keaton Slovis, the, you know, he was preseason all Pac-12
right.
quarterback. Essentially, Jackson Dart sort of surpassed him there. I mean,
What happened with Keaton Slovis?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question because he was, in 2019, an absolute stud. Graham Harrell comes in. The offense looks unstoppable at times. And they, you know, he had four different games, I think, throwing for 400 yards against UCLA. He had four receivers go for 400 yards. They, you know, losing three wide receivers essentially to the NFL and having Drake London this year. Drake London was an NFL guy, but, you know, he's kind of by himself out there. Yeah. He ends up getting hurt in game eight, and that didn't help. But I think overall, the offense wasn't, it was very simple, but it seemed like defense has sort of caught up with it. Like there was just all this talk about, hey, run to grass and we'll throw you the ball. They weren't scheming guys open. Like Drake London, you know, he still led the Pac-12 in receiving after missing the last four games. But he led the nation, I think he still does, in contested catches. And that's good that he can do that, but that's probably not good that he has to do that. Right. Where you love college offenses, like everyone sort of runs this way, and like the tight end comes out that way, and he's wide open, he's throwing the ball. Yeah, and you're not seeing that from USC. So it didn't seem like offensively the scheme was helping Keaton Slovis all that much. And, you know, he got injured and he was just kind of banged up a little bit. His confidence, I think, got hurt. You know, he's in the transfer portal. We'll see. He does love Graham Harrell. He might end up wherever Graham Harrell ends up. But that was where, and they love Jackson Dart, and they needed some kind of, you know, he was a, you know, freshman from Draper, Utah, who ended up being the Gatorade Player of the Year. Wasn't really recruited all that much as a junior, and one of the few West Coast guys that was actually able to play his senior season, because Utah played high school football, and then he blew up, and then, you know, he became a fan favorite. And so I think they wanted to get a little bit of momentum for the end of the season. It didn't really work because he got hurt earlier in the season too. But yeah, that was a whole weird dynamic.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
And this next, 5-6 weeks ahead of the full signing day or whatever, it's going to be crucial both from a high school prospect and Lincoln Riley, you know, scrambling to form relationships with a number of coaches and prospects and parents and all that. And also guys in the transfer portal, right? This is a USC team that very much, as you mentioned, the roster's in flux. Lincoln Riley's trying to figure out who fits the best. What do you anticipate over these next 5-6 weeks in terms of how USC closes and helps to sort of, or starts to form this roster for a new era?
So there's a few guys that'll announce that they might sign, you know, this week and announce at the All-Star games. So there'll be a couple of guys like that. There's actually some players that delayed until February. So that's good whenever, you know, you have a coaching change. But they're, you know, recruiting against teams like Oregon, who also had a coaching change too. So it kind of gives both schools a chance to sort of reset, hire all the position coaches you need, and then make that push again. So I think there'll still be a few more high school players added. But for the most part, like you mentioned, Dan, it's probably going to be from the transfer portal. They have to address some of their needs on the offensive line. They brought in Clay McGuire to coach the offensive line last year. Was weird. The first time they actually had a spread offensive line coach to run the air raid kind of scheme that Graham Harrell brought in. He's off to Washington State now, so we're going to see who Lincoln Riley ends up bringing in for the offensive line coach. But they need some help there. There's just not a ton of bodies. They bring a couple guys back that are like super seniors, like an Andrew Voorhees, and that's going to help out. They got a lot of starts, but they're going to need some depth on the offensive line. I think they're going to go there. And on the defensive line, too, really they're going to need to hit the transfer portal. They got Ismail Sofshur from Alabama last year, but he's been hurt the whole season. So I think a lot of it's going to be Lincoln Riley coming in, kind of assessing what they have. There's probably going to be a steady stream of current USC players going into the transfer portal. They're starting the new weight. You know, you always get a new strength coach, new culture, all that kind of stuff. But this is going to be a proven culture that we've seen work at Oklahoma that USC is going to try to install in Los Angeles, where they've had like this kind of broken culture where no one was really kind of leading the way. So I think when that happens, players that are sitting there like, I kind of was recruited to this where it's kind of more laid back and I don't need to. Now I'm like, oh man, I got to be accountable for this and accountable for that. So there's going to be some more players, I think, Dan, going to the portal and then, you know, kind of fixing what you want to do from there. He also cleaned out like the current recruiting class. Most of the guys that were committed to Clay Helton / Dante Williams, they were sort of let go too. So he's really kind of starting from, you know, going down to the studs. But a program like USC, the way they've been run for the last 6-7 years, I think it's what they needed.
Fair enough. And it actually makes me think about something that's, I think, going to be interesting. I know you don't have an accurate answer for this, so this is probably just a hunch from you. But how is Lincoln Riley selling USC, right? Forever and ever, you have USC guys going, you know, it's an internal promotion. It's an assistant who or a coordinator with Pete Carroll, whether it's Sark, whether it's Lane, whatever. And they're saying, we're going to get back to like the national glory of USC football, right? We're going to get back to winning national championships, competing for the best. And now you have Lincoln Riley recruiting kids who have no recollection of that time, right? Yeah. Like these kids were born during USC's heyday. So it's not like you can go into a living room and say you're going to be the next Reggie Bush or the next Ray Maaluga, because they'll just look at you like, I don't, you know, the guy on Fox? Sure. So Lincoln Riley can now say, okay, we can go back to this, or he can say, this is what we did at Oklahoma. Now we're bringing it to like the bright lights of LA. Is it a combination of both of those things? Is it one of those things? How is USC going to be sold moving forward?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's going to be a combination of those things. The weird thing, though, Dan, we still talk to recruits to this day that talk about Reggie Bush. Like,
sure.
And I'm like, on YouTube and like for whatever reason.
Yeah,
it's
I can
just
see that.
Been,
yeah.
It's so weird. He's just been this player that's recruited for USC for so long after he's been gone. But when we talked to Lincoln Riley initially at the press conference, I mean, he said, this could be the Mecca of college football, looking in the Coliseum. And it felt like he sort of got it, some of the nostalgia, some of the like what makes USC unique. There's some different things about it. And there's a lot of, I think, inherent advantages.
Sure.
He seems to be willing to sort of embrace. But I think a lot of it's going to be, too, like the proven what he was able to do at Oklahoma. I mean, getting, you know, back-to-back Heisman winners and another finalist and the college football playoff appearances. I think that's the kind of stuff where USC had the sort of like background of like, you know, this is a blue blood type of program,
right?
But they've never been to a college football playoff before. They haven't, you know, they haven't won a Heisman in quite a while. They haven't, you know, I don't think the West Coast has had a top 10 Heisman finisher in like 6-7 years, something like that. It's been crazy. And I feel like that's the kind of combination you need to make with the tradition and the, you know, still putting guys in the NFL and all that. But let's get back to winning. Let's do what modern college football teams are doing and is making the college football playoff, getting in the Heisman ceremonies and things like that. So I think it's going to be more of like a combination of that. But he really did seem like he was embracing. Oh, excuse me.
You're good.
He was I'm using too much hands. Embracing, you know, he was standing at the top of the Coliseum overlooking, you know, there's downtown LA. You had the Hollywood sign in the background. And you could see just he was just like, this is crazy. Like, here, I'm right here in Los Angeles. So
right.
It seemed like that's what he was selling his assistant coaches on, and he's going to sell the recruits on as well. But also, obviously, his recent success at Oklahoma.
Why do you think the timing was what it was in terms of Lincoln Riley coming to USC? Obviously, the job was open, so you know, you either take it now or you never know when it's going to come open again. Lincoln Riley was operating in Norman. You look at the quarterbacks he was able to bring in, the number of conference championships, the playoff appearances, the Heisman, the number one overall picks. There was this sense that, like, Oklahoma is a blue blood job. This is a national championship caliber program over the course of decades and decades. Why do you think, and this is, again, you guessing, but what is the sense that you got where he said, this is the time for me to make a move away from this gigantic place to another huge place?
Yeah, there was something made of this was the first year he didn't win the Big 12.
Right.
I feel like the momentum was still on Oklahoma's side. I mean, you're going to the SEC. Now, that's going to make things harder, obviously. You're going to this bigger pond with, sure, like, some pretty big fish in there. But he had, one of the top 2023 recruiting classes already and was really recruiting the heck out of Southern California. So I feel like he was still on some real positive momentum there. It just seemed like this was an opportunity that he could go someplace else, and you were taking a program over from Bob Stoops, and you know, he did an amazing job with it, taking it to another level. But this would be something where he can kind of build it from the ground up. And it's like, well, I have this house I can renovate, and I've done a really good job with it, or I can just complete fixer up. I'm going to tear it down and build it back up again. It seemed like that was part of it. But also, you know, with his family, they talked about his family a lot. Just like, hey, I'm bringing my wife and kids. They can be in Los Angeles. They could, you know, hey, honey, I'm working on the weekend.
Right.
But you take the kids to Disneyland, you know, things sure. like that. It seemed like just an opportunity, not just for him, but the family. It seemed like it was something that was worthwhile. And the fact that he got the buy-in from Mike Bone and Brandon Sosta on what they would be able to do, it seemed to appeal to him. I know that, like, a lot of the Oklahoma fans were really upset. And, it's tough. Breakups are hard. This just seemed like a situation that seemed going to work out for him. And that's why he jumped on it.
One of the things that I've talked about when having USC conversations and looking back at what made Pete Carroll so successful all those years ago was he had that base in California recruiting. He had that base in Southern California recruiting. And obviously, I think the city section, and if you don't follow, was in a different place in terms of where football was. And that's the area in the backyard of USC. And it's just different now. But what Pete Carroll did was he made USC itself the destination and would go to New Jersey, Florida, Ohio, Texas, whatever. And that's where he was able to find a number of talents that really fit in with the USC program. It became this national school. Whereas since then, everybody looks at USC and it's like, you can win a national championship with the kids in your backyard, which doesn't seem to be the case when you look at linemen coming out of or not coming out of Southern California and the state of California and the West Coast. Do you anticipate Lincoln Riley having that goal of a national search and not just relying on that local talent, which there's still great, great kids in Southern California and on the West Coast. But do you anticipate him and USC spending in such a way that says we're going to compete for blue chip linemen in North Carolina and in Ohio and in Michigan, whatever? I mean, you can name, it'll take a number of hands to name the top flight kids that came from all over the country that succeeded at USC. Is that something you see happening in the short term?
Yeah, I think so. I think you do have to recruit the local areas.
Sure.
And, you know, just seeing guys like, you know, Bryce Young and CJ Stroud and, you know, Matt Corral, like all these guys that are Southern California guys having great success somewhere else. That's a big deal when you're not getting, you know, Bryce Young was a USC commit. Matt Corral was a USC commit. Both those guys were, and they're having great seasons, in the SEC. I feel like he has recruited Southern California so well already and was able, I mean, Oklahoma, traditionally, they'd go into like Fresno, like Bob Stoops would go into Fresno, yeah, Central Valley and take guys. But Lincoln Riley's really stepped it up with, his Southern California recruiting. So I feel like continuing that. And the one thing that Pete Carroll, I think, did that wasn't just good for USC, the Pac-12, the West Coast football, you know, it's just kind of become irrelevant. It's just not been, you know, Oregon had that run, you know, this year they were like in the top, you know, four for a while, mm-hmm, and they were in the playoff, and you know, then that falls apart. But it just hasn't been all that relevant. And I think when Pete Carroll made it kind of cool to stay, if you remember like the late 90s, the best players from like the different high schools in California, they were going to like Florida State or Miami.
Justin Fargus to Michigan. Yeah.
Justin Fargus. Yeah. Like he ends up back at USC.
He does. Yeah.
The De La Salle High School. I forget, who was that? DJ Williams. End up going to Miami. There's a bunch of guys, you know, high quarterbacks. When Pete Carroll came over and it was like, oh, it was kind of cool to stay on the West Coast, which helped USC. But I think it also helped the rest of the Pac-12 because then we're like, oh, we can stay on the West Coast and be relevant. You're playing USC or against USC or with them, whatever. I think that helped. But he also, like you mentioned, you can get a Brian Cushing from New Jersey or you get a Mike Williams from Florida. And I think you can kind of continue to build that. I feel like that's something that Lincoln Riley's going to have to do. Like Kayvon Thibodeau, you know, one of the greatest players in the country, but there's not a ton of them where there might be five of those guys in Louisiana on any given year. Mm-hmm. You have to really kind of find them in Southern California on the lineman side. And some of them are just like later developing guys that maybe, you know, they work into it and they become, you know, we've seen Utah get the Devin Lloyds of the world that are like have one scholarship offer, you know, in the Power Five and then, you know, become Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year. So there's some of that too. But if you want to go out and get the like kind of ready-made lineman that the skill and, you know, quickness and the size and all that, you might have to go outside of the footprint. So I think he's going to try to do a combination of those things. But step one is probably just keeping some of these guys home, especially the quarterbacks that have just been going out in droves.
Now, I know obviously fans don't necessarily have strong opinions of position coach hires, but what have been the reactions to the staff that is still very much being built? And I'm not sure the status of Dante Williams. Was the interim? Is he staying? He's a terrific West Coast recruiter. What has been the reaction and what do you think of the staff thus far?
Yeah, I think, I mean, you bring over a couple guys from Oklahoma like you would expect. I think maybe the one that's talked about the most is the Alex Grinch, the defensive coordinator. You know, had a good year at Ohio State and he ends up getting hired at Oklahoma. And you know the way the offenses and defenses kind of have to work together. I mean, it's tough if you're going to do, you know, run an offense that's like, you know, top four in scoring in the country or whatever, and then expect your defense to keep a team to 14 points. Like, it doesn't really happen all that much. But he had great success on the West Coast, Washington State, kind of a quicker defensive front. They had, I mean, if you remember, like, Hercules Mata'afa from, like, guys like that, they were like, oh, they're not that big, but he terrorized USC back in the day. So I think that would maybe the most, I don't know, controversial, but that's the one they talk about the most. But Dante Williams being retained, you know, we might get official word of that, but that's what our sources have been saying, that he's going to be staying on staff. You know, he was one of the top recruiters in the country, and he came on down from Oregon and was the interim head coach for a while. Thought that, you know, things had gone sour enough where they might not be able to stay on staff, but it looks like that's what they're going to do. And I think he'll help, you know, recruiting a lot of those players and maybe make it an easier transition, that there'd at least be one coach on staff that the current players could kind of rely on. Like, hey, there's probably going to be a lot of like, hey, we used to do things this way. And they were like, yeah, we don't do things that way anymore. But the big one I think they want to hear about is the offensive line coach and Bill Biedenbaud. I believe, you know, he's the one that was at Oklahoma that looked like it was going to come over, one of the top offensive line coaches in the country. And I think they bring in, you know, what they were going to do in Oklahoma and sold him on that. And it seems like he's going to stay there now. So USC's probably going to scramble a little, trying to figure out what they want to do on the offensive line. But it wasn't going to, if they brought in Biedenbaud, it would have been like kind of an easy transition.
Sure.
Now you kind of have to like sit back and figure out where they're going to go from here. But for the most part, the staff is kind of filled out there. But I think the offensive line part is the big one we're waiting on.
Is this an 8-9 win program? Obviously, the roster has not been filled out, so you can't fully accurately answer the question. But are the pieces there to, in the short term, look interesting, intriguing, and have enough players who can make winning plays? Or is the back half of 2021 indicative, at least partially, of where this program might be next year?
Yeah, I thought they could be successful in 2021. Now, you fire your coach after two games and everything just kind of spiraled out. But just having that kind of better leadership, when USC's had problems, whatever it is, the athletic department and the football team, it's usually about the leadership. And now that should be fixed with Lincoln Riley. There's going to be some holes in the roster, but I think there's going to be a lot of them addressed with transfer portal guys doesn't always work. We saw Utah bring in a lot of guys, and they weren't great early on, but then they really got it rolling later on. I mean, like a Utah State, they're going to play in the LA Bowl. Like they, I think they brought like 40 transfers in. They, yeah, kind of weird the beginning of the season, and yeah, they're making it work now. So it might be something where if you bring in a lot of transfers, it takes a little while for guys to gel. But I feel just like that upgrade in leadership. Their schedule came out this week, you know, not super daunting. There's not anything crazy. There's, you know, one weekday game, no back-to-back roads, things like that. I think George Kalafkov is trying to do a good job of making sure like the Oregons and the USCs of the Pac-12 aren't doing these crazy schedule stuff that we were seeing
before. I still
remember,
by the way, that Wazoo situation. Was that 2017? That's what cost them the playoff, yes?
I think so, yeah.
It was Sam Darnold. It was Wazoo. It was short week on the road. Going to Pullman, they lose that game. And I remember ahead of the season looking at that and thinking, man, I don't know. I don't know if this is the move to have on your schedule. Like this, not that USC deserves or has earned the benefit of the doubt, but like nobody should be on the, I think they were at Cal or something short week at Wazoo on a Friday. That was,
and we've seen that with Oregon or Washington too, right? Like every year, like if I forget what it was, like Washington or Oregon would have like a bye week before, like just, you know, there would always be a way where like, so this week Washington gets screwed and the next week we'll screw Oregon and then we'll screw US. Make sure everyone gets screwed so there's good parity.
Yeah.
But it's the schedule set up pretty well looking like next year. I mean, they have Rice. And Fresno State, you know, Fresno State's good, but they have a coaching change. They played Notre Dame at the end of the season. They've had a coaching change, too. You know, we'll see how it ends up. But I think they could win. If they win 8 or 9 games, I wouldn't be shocked. But it might take a little while for them to, you know, get going. We've seen sometime, you know, Pete Carroll's first year, he was like 6-6. It could be a season like that, which would be an improvement over 4-8 what they were this year. But if they go, you know, they win 8 games, I think that would be a pretty good accomplishment. And then, you know, obviously you just want to build on that. So as long as they're going in the right direction, if you win 7, you win 9, I mean, that's whatever. But it's it's really to try to build those, you know, championship type of roster. So I think he'll get a high school recruiting class in 2023 that will be better. Yeah. This one will probably be some high school and then some transfer portal guys to try to fill out the roster.
Who are the names that are going to pop that are on the roster right now? Obviously, Drake London was that guy, even, you know, in a losing effort last season for the most part. Who are the guys on offense, on defense that are current building blocks? Because it wasn't obvious in 2021. So who are those guys that expected me, because they're healthier, because the system is a better fit? Who are the building blocks?
Let's start on the defensive side. I love Tuli Tuli Pelotu. His brother, Marlon, played at USC, and just his name would always come up. What might not get a ton of stats, but on the defensive line, just super active, always seems to be around the ball, making plays, helping out his teammates. Just he's popular, wildly popular on the team. I think he's someone that you can kind of build around. Corey Foreman was their highest rated player from last year, you know, a five-star defensive end that wasn't really, it's like, you know, your best ability is your availability. He didn't have a lot of availability in 2021. And I think, you know, some of it is just like figuring out the college game and what you're going to do at that next level. But I think he can be an elite pass rusher, you know, in the mold of a guy like Kayvon Thibodeau. And but he just wasn't on the field all that much. And I think as long as they don't get some weird transfer on the offensive side, like a Caleb Williams comes over from Oklahoma, then all bets are off. But I think that they really like the mobility, the arm strength of Jackson Dart. We saw him in the Washington State game when Keaton Slovis got hurt.
Yeah,
he unfortunately went out with a meniscus injury and just didn't look the same, his mobility. To see a fully healthy Jackson Dart in this kind of offense where we've seen guys that you don't have to, you know, be a Kyler Murray and you know, run for 1,000 yards, but if you can escape the pocket, you know, just pressure and be able to pick up a first down or just, you know, get the ball downfield, I think someone like that is really intriguing. And he's got such arm strength, he can put the ball anywhere. He's kind of a gunslinger guy that just, you know, he's going to make some mistakes and throw some picks, but, you know, also make some big plays. And they love Michael Trigg, who's a, you know, true freshman last year. He ended up getting hurt this year, but just kind of a bigger body wide receiver, like maybe in that Mike Williams from the Pete Carroll days sort of mold, like sort of a hybrid of a tight end wide receiver. And they need someone to step up and fill it. They've always had like these great receivers. Who's that next great guy going to be? I think Trigg's kind of got that ability. So someone that they really like.
Nice. All right. Well, to come full circle, I'm more enthusiastic about USC football. I don't know if I'm optimistic in the short term, but I'm more enthusiastic about and curious about what's going to happen, especially when the level of players keeps increasing with recruiting and transfer portal stuff. And I'll say this. If Lincoln Riley does bring that Redondo accent, I respect commitment to the bit. And so I don't know if that makes me a USC fan, but that makes me a USC appreciator in a way that I haven't previously been. If he starts just dropping gnarlies in press conferences, I'm going to watch him. I'm going to encourage it, and I'm going to like it. So Ryan Abraham, everybody, even if you're remotely interested in Trojan football, uscfootball.com, check out the offerings. They're always deals. I always see these deals, and they seem incredible to me. So check out USC football. Listen to the Peristyle podcast. He's been doing it forever and ever, and it's fantastic. And he leans on Ty for audio, video, or at least audio support, and it sounds amazing. If you're driving in your car and you've got an amazing system, Ryan and his co-hosts sound terrific. So what are you going to do? This is a no-brainer here. Ryan Abraham, enjoy the sunshine. Enjoy the excitement around Trojan football. Thank you very much for joining the Solid Verbal.
Thank you so much, Dan. It's always a pleasure. And you can tell USC is relevant again. I'm on your show.
Like, you're here.
It's been a while, right? USC hasn't been relevant. So it's great to be back.
We did a reaction video a little bit after the announcement came out of Lincoln Riley going to USC. And people were freaking out. And a lot of people watched it for us, and a lot of people listened to it for us. Yeah. And so, you know, I can only say I went to Oregon. I'm an alum. I love it. But if people care about Lincoln Riley, I'm going to talk about Lincoln Riley. Like, I'm a businessman too. So here we are. Ryan Abraham, thank you for bringing Lincoln Riley into my life.
Thanks, Dan.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.